you are listening to Life Before the Revolution, Part 1, Awkwardly Gendered Spaces. This is a podcast by The Well Examined Life. All the music on this podcast is brought to you by two local DC artists. Some of the songs come off of Swoon Boy's new albums and LPs, and also music from local band The Hot Hems. You can find Spoon Boy's music on Bandcamp. You can find The Hot Hems music on Bandcamp as well. What is queer? According to PFLAG, think of queer as an umbrella term. It includes anyone who A, wants to identify as queer, and B, who feels somehow outside societal norms in regards to gender or sexuality. This, therefore, could include any person who highly values queer theory concepts and would rather not identify with any particular label. The gender fluid bisexual, the gender fluid heterosexual, the questioning LGBT person, and the person who just doesn't feel like they quite fit into societal norms and wants to bond with the community over that. It's a fluid label as opposed to a solid label, one that only requires us to acknowledge that we're different without specifying how or in what context. It's also a concise word that people may use if they do not feel like shifting their language along the ever-evolving gender, politics, and or sexuality. It may also be an easier and more concise identity for some people to use if and when people ask, because they do. Act 1. Brewing up when all your friends are lesbians, and you're not. Act 1, Scene 1. Ethnic lesbians.
And a large group of young people are gathered in the living room of a group house. The living room is somewhere between lived in and slightly dilapidated, but in a quaint, cozy sort of way. Bottles of wine intermixed with the leftovers of dark and stormies as two unusually attractive young women in their early 30s are cuddling on a stained beige couch. To a casual observer, their interlocked hands, half mullets, and sexually suggestive conversations would imply a lesbian couple.
Hey, how well do you know that girl?
Pretty well. We met in Occupy Madison. We had to share a one-person tent for like 3 weeks.
Of course you fucking met in Occupy.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It's just, I'm not sure if Occupy is seen as anything more than just a useful device to explain how two random radicals met each other, now when it should be remembered as a gallery of white guilt and the last hurrah of the bougie non-intersectional left. A lack of awareness that means we are doomed to repeat our bouginess like every 5 years. Like a Wes Anderson-directed Occupy-themed remake of Groundhog's Day or something.
Huh. Well, then who would play Bill Murray?
We all do.
Will Andy McDonald still sing about pie?
No. It will be an all-girl twee indie pop punk band headlined by Zooey Deschanel.
Well, given that I dropped out of a PhD program to take part, I'm fine with using it to explain my random friends. Also, don't hate on White Guild. White Guild is how I got jinxed at the flyer like 100 buildings for the town hall last year.
Of course you want it forgotten, so that it will be repeated.
What does that even mean?
Face it, you love that shit. You are basically the prom king of Occupy, and you consciously realize you'll never be that popular again.
First of all, yes, I unabashedly love that shit. Second of all, I go to my Marxist book circle in DuPont Circle whenever I need to feel that sense of self-aggrandizement.
Anyways, back to the point. Is the lady into ladies?
I don't know. It kind of seems like she would be. I think her and Rhymes with Smipster over there are together.
Fucking ethnic lesbians.
Come again?
Ethnic lesbians.
No explanation necessary, huh?
Nope!
Enter Zaid.
Hey Zaid, have you ever heard the term ethnic lesbian before?
Zaid immediately looks over his shoulder at the beautiful woman cuddling on the couch.
No, but it's sort of like Facebook stalking, you know?
What the fuck does it have to do with Facebook stalking?
Think about it. No one knows who came up with that term, but once you hear it, you know what it means. Because it perfectly sums up a social phenomenon that you see all the time, but never had a name.
Zaid sweeps his hand over the crowd as if he was gesturing to a vast, untouched landscape and saying, "Behold!" in a distinctly exotic accent, and not pointing to a crowd of 20 and 30-somethings before speaking like the son of a math teacher from southern Michigan.
All the women in here are ethnically lesbian.
Except Cassandra and her girlfriend, who look like American Apparel models and work for the IMF.
Right, with the exception of the two investment banking models making out on the couch, all the women in this room are basically ethnically lesbians. Proof positive that queers are winning the culture war.
Really, I think log cabin republicanism is proof that queers are kind of losing the culture war.
I think it is going to take more than a few rich white gays in the HRC or log cabin republicans to stop the culture tour de force that is modern day queerdom. But I digress. My problem with ethnic lesbians is not political.
Maybe not, but it probably should be. Doesn't the appropriation of a radical culture by mostly overprivileged cisgender white chicks irritate you?
I'm going to guess, judging by the look Sarah's giving us girls right now, she's fine with a little cultural appropriation, if it means more women with tattoos and faux hawks. Besides, they're not appropriating the look because it's cool. All the women in here are...
Fuck the culture war! I'm just trying to get my pee wet! All these fucking ethnic lesbians are messing with my game!
Well, Raph, tell me how you really feel.
Sarah takes a deep breath, but it is not a calming, meditative breath. She is merely preparing her body for the long rant to come as she watches the two girls talk about their boyfriends while one pushes a stray hair lovingly past the other's triple-pierced ears.
Look, all I'm saying is that I have a very specific type.
Ethnic lesbian.
Radical activist types with queer haircuts, blue highlights, and slightly gothic tattoos. The type of girls who wear skirts on occasional Tuesdays and pink bandanas with skull and crossbones as scarves to work. Down to protest, topless at the dyke mark, salt of the left type. I run into these women everywhere, and it seems like after I spend a week figuring out if they are dating a girl that I saw them cuddling with when we first met, I finally get the ovaries to fucking ask them out for a drink, and they always say...
I have to meet my boyfriend's parents that night.
My high school gay straight alliance is having a reunion that day.
Fuck both of you. No. They say thanks, but no thanks. I'm not into women like that. I'm all, bitch, please, I saw you cuddling with Monica at the pool house last week, and then they're like...
I just like the way it feels.
Exactly! What the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, I feel you. Fortunately, men don't really have that problem. Metrosexuals aren't really that queer and usually hang out with other metrosexuals anyways. You know who you should talk to?
Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron has the same problem in reverse.
As they spoke, Aaron was idly twisting a dread and making small talk with the woman with a stylish pixie mullet, bright blue eyes, and a perfectly placed piercing on her nose. The conversation was pleasant, almost flirtatious. But Aaron was clearly distracted by the fact that his conversation partner was gently stroking his queer co-worker's arm, whose girlfriend he had heard of but never been introduced to, thus leaving him unsure if the woman he was talking to was a friend or a friend.
Oh, shit. Does he not know the girl he's talking to is super gay?
Yeah, that's my point.
His entire group of friends is composed of ethnic lesbians and like 85% bona fide lesbians. Every time he likes a girl, she mentions she's gay right before he would have asked her out.
Seraph ignored both her anger and sexual frustration and stared with a determined brow at the pair.
Okay, I'm gonna go save him from himself. Plus, I think I may have just found myself a natural born wingman.
NC.
Act 1, Scene 2.
the queer woman's burden.
No clear saying. He'd made a point earlier about his artwork that had piqued Kim's interest momentarily. She had leaned in to hear what he was saying more clearly and was staring intently into his eyes. As he stumbled over his words, she smiled reassuringly, a force of habit of an active listener, which Aaron had mistaken for flirtation. Aaron, of course, fell apart for a second and mentioned how large the world was several more times before pausing again to regain his composure. After a moment, he laughed at himself, self-deprecatingly, before being reassured by her smile.
I think your passion for the project is really cute.
Aaron mistakenly took this to mean, your passion makes you really cute to me, and decided now was the moment to make his move. He smiled more confidently now, a smirk just humble enough to be charming before opening his mouth to make a witty comment.
Hey Kim, how's it going?
Sarah leans in and gives Kim a quick and playful, though passionate kiss. The type of kiss that says, "Oh, hey, Aaron. By the way, I'm gay."
Good. Your friend Aaron here was just telling me about his really cute project.
Later, when he would tell the story to ethnic lesbian friends as a sort of storytelling-turned-emergence therapy session, he would simulate the sound of a record scratching for added effect. Currently, however, his wounded ego disassociated him from the moment, and his inner monologue began to pontificate on the supreme ugliness of the word cute. Before either Kim or Sarah could notice how odd it was that he was staring blankly at them, Seraph arrived.
Hey, Goggins.
Hey, Raph. What up?
Hey, Kim. Hey, Sarah. What are you guys talking about?
Aaron was telling me about his project.
I'm marveling at the fragility of the male ego.
What?
Huh?
Sarah raised an eyebrow quizzically. She was unsure if she had heard him correctly. She had.
Guardians, do you have a second? I need to...
Absolutely.
Cool.
Seraph and Goggins walked through a crowd of gorgeous neo-bohemian lefty queerdom, marveling at the beautiful array of casually cuddling women.
If I was a religious woman, I would pray that the governor doesn't sign that piece of shit deal. It's a giant slap in the face for all the work we've done.
Yeah, fuck Marilyn, May.
The last thing I prayed for was tits.
How'd that work out for you?
All the women in the area, including Seraph, looked down at the woman's chest with appreciative glances, confirming either God or puberty had heard her prayers, while Aaron instinctively looks in the other direction, searching for something remotely interesting enough to explain his averted gaze.
Maybe we should look into the power of prayer.
What that? Religion is the opiate of the masses.
I'm pretty sure Facebook is the opiate of the masses.
Seraph and Aaron continue to walk through the glorious afterglow of the party as the organizers debate the modern opiate that prevents the unknowing masses from revolting against their capitalistic overlords. The conversation, though originally comical, becomes increasingly intellectual and ideologically partisan. By the time our duo make it out to the kitchen, the organizers can't decide on the opiate of the masses, but agree that all Marxist discussions need vodka shots.
You know, it's okay to look, Gardens. Just don't touch.
Pretty sure it's not okay for me to do either, actually.
Wow, feminism has really done a number on you.
Yeah, your liberation came at the price of my total emasculation. How does that feel?
Seraph ponders the flippant sarcasm seriously for a second as the pair walks out towards the back porch. While pondering, she notices a man in his late 30s opening a beer for his younger, clearly drunk paramour. As he returns the bottle opener to the kitchen, Seraph takes the newly opened beer from the inebriated young woman and begins to drink it herself without breaking stride. After a quick swig, she says,
"It's aggressive, you little bit."
Now on the back porch, Seraph takes another long swig of her new beer and savors in the righteousness of the moment for a second. After a few brief moments, they both look through the window at the couple and silently mock the man's angry bewilderment that his girlfriend's beer is gone.
She's cute. I should save her from years toiling in servitude as a street girl.
Ah, yes, the queer woman's burden. Saving poor, unsuspecting, unorgasmed straight women from a life of stilted love and oppression by giving them an identity that's still illegal in 35 states.
Fuck it. Better to serve time in prison as a lesbian than reign in the kitchen as a housewife.
I'll have to take your word for that.
You should. Being straight is fucking terrible.
Yeah, I really hate how my experience is normalized. My parents are always telling me to find a nice girl to settle down with and marry.
It's so fucking oppressive.
Okay, maybe you should say that straight people are terrible.
All straight people? Really?
Straight men, then.
There you go.
Fuck the patriarchy, man!
Yes, that's that shit.
I'm serious. I hate seeing girls being taken advantage of by the older but otherwise childish boyfriends. I can't believe that it's 2014 and there are still people who were raised to think that the best thing, no, the only thing that they can do in life is cook food and raise the kids.
I hear you. I think it's terrible that there are places where that's all women think they should do. But I think for some women it's actually a good life, so long as it is somewhat a free choice. Also, we can't pretend that all queer relationships are healthy.
First of all, free choice is a myth of German philosophy. Second of all, we also can't pretend that romantic relationships between two women is as abusive statistically as a man and a woman. Third, who the fuck would freely choose to be a housewife?
Honestly, I really want to be a house husband.
Really?
Fuck yeah. My dream is to meet an ambitious and beautiful young executive who fears having to put her career on hold to raise kids. Then I'll sweep in and be like, no, my love. I will forgo working for the man for 60 hours a week, and I will raise your children.
That sounds terrible.
If by terrible you mean amazing, then yes, I couldn't agree with you more.
No, I mean like soulless and demoralizing.
Wow, you really hate kids, huh?
No, not parenting itself, but having that be all you do. No one will take you seriously. People will think you're some 1950s Stepford wife with no ambition, no self-respect, just an MRS degree.
I think you're forgetting that I will still have a penis. Pretty sure society will take me seriously.
Oh, right. I always forget about your penis.
Thank you.
Seraph shrugs.
Highest compliment I can give a man.
I'll take that. Though I must say, as much as I hate on men, I'm still a pretty big fan of my own penis.
I'm sure you are. Maybe you're right, but I did notice you overlooked my point about the trouble penises like yours tend to cause women like her. I still think I could save her from a miserable life trying to please that dude.
I think you might be reading a lot into our casual observations of them. I think you might also be overlooking the fact that sexual orientation is not a choice.
So too.
Seraph's smile slowly grows in tandem with Aaron's growing unease. Like many members of marginalized group, Seraph takes a righteous pleasure in watching privileged people stew in the insecure awkwardness of their privilege. She knew that Aaron was weighing theory versus lived experience and adjusting the scales with guilt as she quietly drank her beer and loved every moment of it. Aaron, to his credit, recognized the look on her face as the same one he got when he watched white people debate whether or not to ask him to stop using N-word and let the matter drop.
Look, sexuality is complicated, but I think most people's natural state is to be bisexual to some extent. The narrative that sexuality is not a choice arose out of the narrative of it being viewed as a deviant sexual activity. The gay community started saying, it's not a choice, it's who I am, out of political pragmatism, not based on some theory of human sexuality.
That sounds a lot like me hitting on you by saying, you're not gay, you just haven't met a real man yet.
I've yet to meet a real man, only overgrown boys with freakishly large hands.
You know what I mean.
The problem with you saying that it's not that it's empirically wrong, it's that it continues a marginalizing narrative of already marginalized groups. As you often point out, straight people aren't oppressed. Sometimes all a girl needs is a little convincing.
Seraph finished her beer and stares at the unsuspecting young girl with a unique look of righteous indignation and lust. Aaron thought about how many times he had heard the phrase, all a girl needs is a little convincing, and how relieved he was that, at least this time, he wouldn't have to give his 45-second rant of rape culture. Well, he was pretty sure he didn't need to.
End scene. Act 1, Scene 3, Natural Born Wingman. Dax, do you know that dude in the blue flannel and khakis?
Aaron spoke to Dax in the awkward, stilted language he usually did. He alternated between averting their eyes and staring perhaps a little too intently. He was torn as he had assumed, based merely on his own attraction to Dax, that Dax identified as a woman. Yet a few conversations, and a growing stumble on Dax's chin, were making Aaron second-guess that assumption. Down for the cause in his heart, but devoid of real-life experience interacting with trans thrift shop models, Aaron was unsure how to broach the topic.
Yeah, we dated. Briefly.
An even more awkward feeling began to fill the already awkward distance between them. Aaron was unsure how to take the news at first, but was soon distracted by the amazingly clear blueness of Dax's eyes and his strikingly handsome features. Aaron concluded that regardless of how Dax identified, they were certainly one of the most beautiful human beings that he had ever met.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
I'm over it and single, not that... Anyways, why do you ask?
Instead of answering, Aaron looked at the floor and counted the butterflies in his stomach. Seraph gave him a moment to recover, having faith that now that it was clear, Dax was at least somewhat interested that Aaron would save himself. As faith turned to vicarious embarrassment, Seraph stepped in.
We need to distract him. Goggins is going to engage Douche and Flannel in conversation while I flirt up his girl.
Right. While you flirt with the girl, he's getting drunk.
Just talk about Jacobin. That's all he ever wants to talk about. Worst year of my life.
Dax said that overdramatically, hoping to make it clear to Aaron that they were over him, but then they worried that they might have implied that they were over men. Now it was time for Dax to look at the floor. To the casual observer, it would have appeared that they were working on an improv routine where they pretended to be young gay teenagers, both recently out, unsure as to who asks who to dance.
Right, Goggins. I'm gonna need you to focus up!
Cool, name's Mark, inter-radical lefty shit. Let's get this party started.
Aaron regained his previously cool and calm demeanor. While he was unchangingly inept around women and men, he was a natural-born wingman, capable of orchestrating some of the greatest and choice matches out of anyone in the game. He walks with a steady swag over to the couple.
Hey Mark, Dax tells me you're into the Jacobin. I was wondering if you ever go to the DC meetups at all.
Dax? Oh, you mean Karen. Yeah, I go from time to time.
Had Aaron had any reservations about guy code, violations of what he was about to do, they vanished as quickly as the prick smiled, and Aaron pretended not to be upset.
How are they? A friend of mine invites me to them all the time, but I'm hesitant to go. There's always some whack job ranting about their myopic view of identity politics.
Aaron masterfully phrased the last statement, as if to infer that he and Mark shared some grand enlightened view of politics, and not, as he could have, that people like Mark were why he didn't go.
Haha, oh god, you have no idea. The other day some trainee came in talking about how we need to move beyond Mark's, because he doesn't say anything about an identity that didn't even exist 20 years ago.
Oh god, I hate how popular it is to bash brilliant thinkers just because they're old, male, and white, as if they aren't the basis of Western thought.
I know, right? It's like, stop making everything about you and your fucking genitals, right?
Yeah, it's nuts. They need to check their privilege.
I know, right? I mean, I hope this doesn't offend you, but it's just like reverse racism, you know?
Why would that upset me?
I mean...
I'm just fucking with you. Yeah, every time I go to a radical event, there's always some black dude blaming white people for the crack epidemic, as if it's Reagan's fault that the war on crime criminalized black bodies.
Right? I wish you people would just take some responsibility. I mean, not you people as in your people, but you people, like
black people.
Aaron watched gleefully as Mark stewed in his own racism. Unlike Seraph, Aaron's pleasure was almost wholly sadistic. His smile widened as Mark's contorted into a pained apology. Aaron held Mark's gaze as Mark wilted. Mark felt like the moment lasted hours, but in reality it lasted until Aaron saw Seraph making out with Mark's former companion.
Alright, man. It was cool talking to you. You should get another beer. I think it's gonna be a long night for you.
Aaron patted Mark on the shoulder, half in pity, half in jest, and walked over to a sullen Dax, who had overheard the conversation. After a few seconds, chugging a beer as if to refill his depleted sense of superiority, Mark turned to look at his girlfriend, who was very clearly no longer his girlfriend.
Wow. I never...
Fucking dykes. The only bitches I ever seem to find always end up being fucking dykes.
Me too.
Mark stepped towards Seraph, but stops when he sees Dax standing next to Aaron, and guilt flashes over his face momentarily.
By the time the AA returns, Mark is walking out of the room. His absence leaves an eerie but welcomed vacuum in the room, a vacuum that Dax fills by stepping to Aaron, giving him a long, passionate kiss as if in protest. Aaron is far too stunned to kiss back and stares into Dax's crystal blue eyes for a moment after Dax releases him. Sorry, I... Dax turns to rush out the room, but Aaron catches their hand and holds it gently.
Don't go.
I gotta go.
I love you.
What?
You're beautiful.
Thanks.
I don't love you.
What?
I love kissing you.
Enter Dax's roommate and ex-girlfriend, Cammie. Due to the fact that she was taking shots for 5 minutes, she missed everything that had just occurred.
Yeah, I gotta take me home. You have to go to work tomorrow.
Dax slips away with the roommate in the chaos. Aaron stares at the doorway like a wet puppy dog, fighting the instinct to touch his lips.
End scene. Act 1, Scene 4. The patriarchy is not secure. Part of me wants a moped.
That's cute.
You know, every time you say something I want to do is cute...
It makes you not want to do it anymore?
Yes.
Just embrace your gender identity.
What is my gender identity?
I don't know, but it's kind of cute.
I'm glad my gender insecurity amuses you.
I wouldn't make fun of you if I thought that you were actually insecure about it.
Really?
Of course. Though I must say, I really enjoyed you hitting on my girlfriend last week.
Bit of a non sequitur, but I'll go with it. I wasn't hitting on her.
Not a non sequitur. Completely related points.
Sometimes it's really difficult for me to tell what level you're fucking with me on.
It amazes me that despite being a good storyteller, you have absolutely no game.
Again, wasn't hitting on her.
You kind of were.
I was flirting with her. I didn't know she was your girlfriend, but we're having a lovely conversation before she said I was cute.
You really hate that word, don't you?
Only when women my age call me it. It either confuses the issue or delegitimizes what I just said.
I didn't realize the male ego was this frail.
Welcome to A View of the Patriarchy by Aaron Goggins. Seriously, though, every time you say it like you would tell a child who still believes in Santa Claus that their plan to stay up all night is cute.
So what I'm hearing is that you need to grow up.
Wrong.
In this analogy, is your belief in your manhood like a child's belief in Santa Claus?
No.
Then I don't understand what you're saying.
And we're done.
Seriously, though, help me unpack this shivering mass of contradictions that is your maleness.
Shivering mass? That's fucking cold.
If the jockstrap fits.
Fine. You know what? I'll go down this rabbit hole with you, as long as we can unpack the absurdity that is your whiteness.
What's wrong with my whiteness?
What could possibly be right with your whiteness?
You know what I mean.
Sometimes you're the whitest person I know. Then sometimes I make allusions to musicals like Rent, and you have no fucking clue what I'm talking about.
Sounds like we're talking about your gender identity again.
False.
Keep telling yourself that, honey.
You know what? I refuse to be condescended to by...
A woman?
A white woman.
What?
I saw 12 years a slave.
What does that have to do with anything?
It makes you historically complicit in my oppression and the fragility of black masculinity.
I agree with the first part, but to be fair, the only black man whose masculinity is frail here is you.
Here's where intersectionality is just a convenient paint job for white supremacy.
What do you mean, intersectionality?
Intersectionality is...
Please tell me you're about to mansplain third-wave feminism to me.
And we're done here.
So you keep saying.
The two continue to walk in silence, each with the same smug smile on their face.
Anyways, I need a favor.
Came to the wrong place.
Good. I need to talk about Dax.
I heard about that.
Really, I need to talk about this and not get left.
Then you really came to the wrong place.
Can you at least not mock me?
I can try.
I'm kind of into her, but...
Real quick, Dax uses neuter pronouns.
Fuck. Thank you. So you understand my dilemma.
You have strong, seemingly reciprocated feelings for trans-identified beauty, but due both to generally having no game and to a lack of trans awareness, don't know where to go from here.
Something like that.
Well, I got bad news and terrible news.
Start with the terrible news.
Dax got back together with their roommate.
Fuck.
Yeah, this happens pretty often between the two of them. Unfortunately, Dax is usually a bit of a mess for a while after the inevitable breakup.
Figures. This always happens.
The men you fall for always go back to their functionally alcoholic roommates slash ex-girlfriends.
Yeah, something like that.
It's too bad. Me and Seraph were just talking about how cute you'd be together.
You mean due to our mutual idiosyncratic awkwardness?
Exactly.
Yeah. I really thought things were starting to look up when Dax kissed me. They're so fucking gorgeous. I don't know. Part of me wonders if I'm ready to date someone who...
You're hyper-conscious of marginalizing and offending?
Yeah. I feel like... I once asked to go out to prom. She said yes and was super excited about it for 2 weeks. Right before prom, she stopped talking to me and she avoided me all night. She danced with me for maybe, like, 2 songs twice. After prom, I never spoke to her again. It wasn't until years later that I learned her father told her she couldn't date fucking black guys, and she freaked out.
You're not that girl, Aaron. And your family would never say that.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know if I could tell people I had a boyfriend or explain to people everything. I've dated too many white girls like that. Dax deserves better.
They really do. JK, you guys like each other. When Dax realizes their girlfriend is a barely functional degenerate incapable of caring for them, they'll move on. And after a temporary unraveling, be willing to make a decision about whether they can deal with a lack of trans familiarity.
Talking about issues I wouldn't have imagined grappling with a few months ago.
Walking on the edge of the wake of queerness is not an easy path for a straight man to walk, but I respect you for tripping your way along it.
Aaron looked into Sarah's eyes for a second to increase the meaning of what he was going to say next.
Thanks.
We need to get you a girl, Goggins.
You're telling me. You know that tall, gorgeous brunette who I met at your birthday party?
You're gonna have to be more specific.
You're so fucking lucky, Sarah. You know that?
I do know that.
She has curly hair, was talking about Jewish day school and Palestine.
Could still be like 4 women who are there.
She was dancing to Beyonce all night.
3.
She had a pierced nose and blonde highlights.
2.
She mentioned she was from Maryland.
Oh, yeah. That's my roommate's girlfriend. I don't know her very well. What about her?
Never mind.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely a lesbian.
Of course she is.
Sorry, kiddo.
Honestly, I don't understand what I'm doing wrong here. I joke about my relationship issues a lot.
Because they're hilarious.
Yeah, but it bothers me a little bit.
And by a little bit, you mean...
Exactly. I really want to be in a loving, supportive, committed relationship, but I can't seem to find one. Everyone around me seems to be getting married, starting families, or moving in with long-term partners, and I haven't had a real relationship in years. Is there something wrong with me?
When was the last time you were turned down for a date, Aaron?
I don't know. It's been a really long time since I've asked anybody out.
And therein lies the problem.
It's not that easy.
It's incredibly easy. Hey, girl. I don't know you that well, but I think you're smart and pretty, and I'd like to go for a walk with you sometime. That's literally all you have to do.
Really? Just walk up to a random woman and say that?
Not random women. Women you know and meet.
All the women I know and meet are married, lesbians, or people I have no interest in dating.
All of them?
The vast majority.
So go out and meet more women.
Where, rape culture center? Oh, I mean, happy hour? Hey girl, I can buy you this mind-altering substance that will not only lower your inhibitions, but also show you I can make enough money to buy you nice things. That's a great line. Actually, I don't know why I don't use it more often on unsuspecting, slightly inebriated women.
Point taken.
Dating shouldn't be this hard. That's all I'm saying.
I'm still not really convinced it is this hard for everyone.
Good talk. End scene. End of act one. This podcast was brought to you by Well Damn Life. We'd like to thank all of our actors, Ben, April, Alexis, Katie, Jeremy, John, Rob, Hannah, Ellie. We'd also like to thank Sam and Emma for hosting. And Again, we'd like to give a shout out to Spoon Boy and Hot Hymns for allowing us to put their music onto this play. Thank you very much. And to all you listeners, go out and support your local artists. These are two artists from DC, two bands from DC. Find their music on Bandcamp. You can find Hot Hymns also at hothymns.com. If you have any questions or want to hear more stuff like this, make sure to subscribe to our podcast at The Well Examined Life, or go to our website at thewellexaminedlife.com. Thanks. Have a great day. I want to do, ooh, I want, baby.